ready?
Yes, yep.
Okay, I'd like to call the special meeting of the Community Service District Board in order. I'm going to dispense with the Pledge of Allegiance because there's nobody here. We'll do it at the regular meeting. Carol, will you call roll, please?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves? Not here. Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. I'm going to dispense with public comment because there is no public here. At this time, I will take us from open session into closed session and turn it over to legal.
District will adjourn into closed session as identified on D1 on the agenda.
Recorder's on?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, at this time, I'd like to take us from closed session back to open session. Report on closed session. Legal, please.
No reportable action.
Thank you very much.
And all members were present for the meeting.
Oh, Carol, would you show that Kevin is here?
At what time?
Thank you.
At what time? 6:35, did you arrive?
6:32.
6:32.
You just missed it. Okay. At that point, we'll adjourn until the regular meeting. Watch the clock, it never moves. There it goes. You guys ready? Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order. If you'll rise and join Chris in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Caldwell, please go.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves?
Graves.
Kevin.
Director Graves? Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. This leads us to public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item at the time that item is called for discussion. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter, and any clarifying questions will go through the chair. Any public comment? I'll close public comment. Thank you. Area agency reports. Sheriff's office, please.
Good afternoon, everyone.
How are you?
Doing good, guys. Doing good. For the month of July, we had about 533 calls for service come through our office, and we had 52 reports generated from that. I believe I handed out the states earlier, but the staff further for you guys, so you can skip through that. Looking at it myself, just kind of going through it. Of course, the biggie, and I say this every time I come up here, is the property crimes. The property that's less than plain view, in vehicles especially. It's easy to take. Seems to be a lot of the ladies are forgetting their purses at the shopping center or leaving them in a buggy or something of that nature. That's where the petty thefts you see right there from the building or from the, they leave their purse. They get their purse back, but the money's missing. Also on another separate, I think, some other incidents over at the community center also. So people just pay behaving badly. They're taking money, cash, and stealing stuff. I did see an increase a little bit on identity theft. More people are calling about that, some cards, credit cards, or things being purchased that they didn't purchase, somebody else did. Some other folks are coming in with mail that's being stolen out of their mailboxes, and they're finding mail on the road. That's another issue. The best advice I can give on that aspect for that is keep an eye out on the streets. If you're driving around during the day, you see people going through mailboxes, you need to call that in to us. Good description of the vehicle, location would be good, and a license plate would be great. Because if we can catch this individual, or at least pull that guy over and catch some of that mail in, and then the officers will have something to work with on that aspect of it. Other than that, the other issues here, just people treating each other bad. So, any questions from anyone?
The thing I was going to ask you about, that I've noticed, is a lot of kids out in the street again at night, 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, 11:30, so the kids look like they're 10, 12, 13, 14 years old in a shopping center where Aladino's is, in that area. Am I the only one that's noticing that? Or?
You know, I don't see any of the cars. I know the resident deputies are big on that, and they'll roll through the parking lots, but it's got to be blocked for, you know, of course, you call it in, they're going to make contact with these kids. Especially around a safer area, if you do see that, it is late, you think they're underage. I mean, Contra Costa County does have a curfew for juveniles. It's Saturday, you know, Friday nights, Saturday nights, and I think it's till midnight. The rest of the school, you know, the school nights, I call it school nights, but the week nights, I think is 23 at 11 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. But there is a that on the books. If you call them in, have a, I also could at least go in and check on these kids and see what they're doing, especially around the Safeway area or in the back of the Safeway area where that little walking trail is and stuff. So I know we've getting people calling us to let us know about our shopping center where our office is, and, we, and our guys are over there all the time, and I'll always make contact with them and shoot the skateboarders away and stuff.
That's where I see them, because I live right around the corner. I'll come in at midnight or 1 in the morning.
If you call us, you'll do it, yeah. Because a lot of people, as you can see, with a patrol car, I mean, you can see them by the way when they're driving down the street. So what, people just sit on the side or hide from them when you drive by. So.
Okay. Kevin, any questions?
Yeah, Tony, where it says mover, that's just a moving violation?
Yes.
Okay. And then, obviously, I want to be hanging out on Sandpoint, because that's where all the loud music is. So that must be where the good parties are.
That's the party.
That's what I saw.
Yeah, and all I can say is just keep calling that stuff in. That's all we can do.
I do appreciate you guys responding to the fireworks stuff. But it's
well, as you can see, we had a kind of rough
absolutely.
Numbers. We had about 30 calls for fireworks on July 4th itself. You can see the calls on there. I think 20 of them were for fireworks, and we had about 8 or 9 that were marked as disturbing the peace. But if you look at the data, it's July 4th.
It must
4th.
Be having some effect, because they're still happening, but not as long of, I mean, there's like one boom or a couple of quick ones.
They round pop
because so, they don't want to get caught. So at least they're cutting down. You notice about midnight every night there's like an M80.
Probably when the officer drives by in parks and he's like, okay, wait till the news.
So,
no, thanks for your help.
Bill? No. Marianne?
Really good job.
Public comment? Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, let's hear from the fire department. Or is it CHP here?
No, they're not.
Hugh, how are you?
Good evening, Board. How are you? I got a couple reports here, and I think a couple minutes to give you a quick update on the district. Let's go through the calls first, and there. I brought extra copies tonight of both talking about our benefit assessment and our calls for the month, or back to the table there. So for the month of July, the district was fairly busy. And you guys kind of already hit the head with the 4th of July and all the wonderful fireworks. District ran 551 calls for the month. Our average response time was 7 minutes and 28 seconds, or 26 seconds. In the Discovery Bay area, there were a total of 60 calls in July. Our average response time was 9 minutes and 18 seconds, which is up a little bit from the months before. But we had 4 vehicle accidents in the month. Out on J4, you know, the S turn. So that increases the response time from 59 on there, so it puts it out on the outer border. So, you know, when you're looking at these response times, it's just not here in Discovery Bay. That engine, you know, once we get that reduction, it's covering all the way to the county line on Fire and Highway.
It just takes a couple of long ones to extend that average out of Bend Park.
It most definitely does. A little update from the board meeting on Monday night. As I've reported to you over the last few months, we've been looking at different ways to do a revenue measure. The last 4 months, we've been working pretty diligently on a benefit assessment. The difference between a benefit assessment and a parcel tax is a benefit assessment deals with talking about revenue measure with actual property owners. And under Proposition 218, with a benefit assessment, you have to show that there's a special benefit to each kind of property. What I gave you as the second report tonight is I gave you a copy of the PowerPoint that our consultants used to explain the benefit assessment to the board. So this will kind of break things down for you from there. The board did accept the preliminary engineer's report for the benefit assessment. We will be going out the ballot to property owners on August 22nd. If you go all the way to about slide 13, this will kind of give you a breakdown of how the benefit assessment works and what it looks like for the average family residence. Our engineer that did this report looked at using uniform fire code and building code, along with ISO standards, as how they built the special benefit. On a benefit assessment, it can't be used for anything as far as medical responses. So all our medical responses have been taken out of this when they were figuring this out. along with any type of general benefits, such as through traffic, areas that are covered by the state, responsible area, and those things. So if you look at on page 13 of slide 13, it kind of gives you an example on how this benefit assessment works. This was set up for a resident, a single family resident within the district. It's less than 3,600 square feet. It's with sprinklers, so it's a newer residence. It's within 5 miles of a fire station and 1,000 feet of a hydrant. You can see when they do that calculation, that benefit assessment is about $103.74 a month. To kind of give you another example, using a resident out of Buffalo Island that's more than 5 miles away from the station, not sprinklered, without a fire hydrant, you can see that they receive less benefit, general benefit from the district because of the distance and not being able to get there quickly. And when that's broken down, that benefit would be about $47.88. And then the third example that's kind of built into this because of the amount of area that we do have involved in our mutual threat zone with the state and properties that are already being assessed by the state for their prevention fee. We did a residence on Morgan territory, so this house is on Morgan territory. It's about 5,000 square feet. It has sprinklers. There is a fire hydrant within 1,000 feet of the property, and you can see because it's in the state area, it also gets an adjustment of 50% because it's only covered by the district half the year because of the Amador contract. So an example of their assessment would be $31.92. The other thing with a benefit assessment that affects this board and affects every government agency, that every property owner, every that owns property, is going to get ballots for each of their properties. So as the town of Discovery Bay has property, and after the ballots are mailed or when they're mailed on August 22nd for each of your parcels, you're going to also receive a ballot for voting on the benefit assessment too. So just want to make sure you're aware of that, and I know Rick will be expecting this fairly good stack in the mail that show up.
So an interesting, it kind of works against logic from the standpoint that the closer you are to a station, you receive greater benefits, you pay more money.
Because you're getting the benefit of...
Understood. But it's kind of, you would think it almost would cost those living further away more, but in fact, that's not the way the assessment's set up.
And this, again, is done by a neutral party and an engineer to conduct this report.
Right.
There's less of a benefit to those properties because they're receiving less of the service. That service isn't liable to make as much of a benefit if their house is on fire.
Understood.
Time and distance, the ability of not having water to put on the fire.
And they take into consideration second engine and all that stuff when they make the computations?
I did not make you full copies of the engineer's report. Without the actual assessment data, it's about 30 pages. It is available on our website under engineer's report. The other thing that we have the ability that if you know your APN number, your parcel number, you can call us and we can go through the actual assessment, give you your actual dollar for each piece of your property. We have 43,763 parcels within the district. So we have 2 5-inch binders of all the data for the thing. So again, if people have questions on your ballot, there's going to be phone numbers, but my office is always available to answer any questions. The other topic that came out at the board meeting, as I've been reporting back to you on fairly on a monthly basis, that we've been losing staff at our SAFER grant, is running out in November. At this point, we've lost 10 full-time firefighters in the last 3 months. I have 2 on long-term, 1 on long-term injured, and 1 on active military duty right now. With that being said, we've been trying to cover all 5 stations with overtime, and it unfortunately, we can't keep the personnel working at this level. We had 116 overtime shifts in the month of July to keep the stations open. Board made the decision to temporarily close the fire station while we finish this benefit assessment to find out if we're going to have long-term funding or not. Effective September 1st, we'll be closing the downtown Broadwood station. It's a really hard thing for me personally. This is my third set of station closures in the last 4 years, and it's not what we signed up to do. It's not the way we want to do business in this. However, working our folks as hard as we've been working them for the last couple of months, we're going to get somebody injured because we just got too far fatigued. We do have a plan in place that when we get the results of the benefit assessment on October 6th, if the benefit assessment passes, to rehire the 10 positions we're down or more between then, and if that station reopens as fast as we can. So we're kind of working parallel on that. The other thing I missed in the benefit assessment, we will do a public hearing at 10 o'clock on Monday, October 6th, and people can either mail their ballots back or bring their ballots and turn them in at that time. We're using a company called True Ballot that specializes in these kind of ballot counting and everything. And the city hall will be open for the rest of the day, and we'll adjourn our 10 o'clock meeting to go into our normal 6:30 meeting, and we're hoping to have results at the end of as we start our normal meeting. The technology, because of the barcode scanning and everything, people are going to be able to actually sit in the city hall and watch the results on their screen as the ballots are being counted. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
If the assessment passes, what does that do for station closures other than Broadway?
That would maintain our five stations that we're currently trying to keep right now.
It would open Brentwood back up.
It would open Brentwood back up and keep that. If the assessment fails, the recommendation would be to close the Knightson station December 1st after the SAFER grant runs out. I put on the back of the benefit assessment PowerPoint, I also put the staff report regarding staffing and everything. You'll see on the last three pages of that, I included the maps that I did for the board showing the coverage area. Each of those circles on that map relate to a 5 mile circle, which is using ISO standard that as long as you're within that 5 miles, you're considered protected. You keep your protection class as far as their ratings and everything. You can see the first one of the three maps is the five station model we have. We have pretty good coverage. You can see as we reduce down to four and to three that the coverage is there. The three station model that we used in 2012, whether not everybody thought that was the best coverage and everything, but you can see by looking at the map, we basically put a triangle across the district and covered the district pretty well.
Very last page.
As you can, as I've said before, you know, covering 249 square miles with five stations doesn't work, doesn't do any math at all. However, that's the best coverage we can do if we end up in that situation. You know, we run into a lot of situations, and we've seen it happen out here in Discovery Bay over the years with some of the fires, that we get the first engine on scene, and we're waiting for that second engine because unless there's a known rescue by OSHA requirements, we can't go in and do an interior fire attack until we have a total of four firefighters on scene. That's why this five station model and being able to keep all five stations open is the most important coverage for us. Some people will say, well, we'll look at that map and say, well, the district can pretty much do this with five stations. I'll take you back a few more years. We had the city gave report when we were still under the umbrella of the Board of Supervisors that said in 2006, to cover this district properly, we needed 10 stations.
Let me ask you something further here, where I'm confused. From what I read, we lost 10 firefighters. I read that, and we didn't lose them because we couldn't pay them. We lost them because they had higher paying jobs someplace else. That's how the paper reported it.
Okay. We lost them for two reasons. They know the grant's running out, and we don't have a funding mechanism in place to keep them, and they left for more secure jobs, which are also higher paid jobs.
That's my question. So if the grant passes, are we giving them raises, or are they coming back at the same money?
I don't think I'll get any of those employees back. Or I think we'll end up...
If you hire 10 new employees, are they coming back at the same money these people left at?
We're currently under contract, and what our wages are, or what the board and everybody's negotiated is. This benefit assessment isn't going to bring enough money in to make us competitive to Contra Costa Fire or San Ramon Fire or even Rodeo Hercules or Pinal.
I think that's why I wondered how you're going to keep them.
Well, you know, we've been at training grounds. We end up this. I'm coming up on 10 years with the district since 2005 when I came back. This is the lowest we've been. We've worked with five or six and been able to make it happen in between things. We're to the point where almost a station and a third down in personnel, so we can't keep it up.
Thanks. Questions? Bill? Kevin? Chris?
Thank you.
Public comment? Hugh, thank you very much.
I have a real quick question. Hugh, I received a letter in the mail the other day from ISO, and there was no attachment. Can you... I know you got multiple copies because they referred you in multiple different versions of yourself.
I'm working to get that out to my board, and to be honest with you, I've been focused the last week on this. You should have probably got that either Thursday or Friday last week.
I did, but there was no attachment, so I knew you were coming, so I was going to ask you about it, but I'll follow up with you.
I'll give you information that hasn't even gone to my board yet. Your ISO rating stayed the same. So you're not going to see a change in the Discovery Bay area. As long as you're within 5 miles of a fire station, your ISO rating is a 4. We're right dead in the middle of the 4. We're not high on it or low on it. We actually came in right at 65.5 on the rating. Not having a fire station within 5 miles of your house, the new rating will be a 10, which means you're unprotected. Like having
good
fire department.
I would like to acknowledge something at this point. I want to say that you know, I've been working with you now probably like 4 years, probably almost my whole time on the board, and I've been attending the fire meetings, and Hugh's done a really good job of making sure that we're covered. It's his benefit too, so he's not doing it just, but I will say he's been very fair. He's been up against a lot of opposition because that's an overloaded board with people from that side of town, and I just want to thank you for being very fair about his presentation and his recommendations, and he's fought really to keep 59 open for us so we don't end up in that ISO problem. So I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for that.
I appreciate that, but if you know, we have a responsibility for the whole district.
I appreciate that.
You guys saw your first cuts, you know, when we lost 58 and we lost 57. We've been able to maintain the response time is pretty close to where we predicted them when I came here and told you about those closures at the first time. However, you know, we have no fire protection for this community if 59 isn't there. And so, you know, I know it's not what you used to have, but, you know, it is from there. I still think having 59 with three personnel there versus two sets of two-person engine companies, that you're still getting a more effective response than you were with two engines.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very nice meeting you.
Supervisor Bifo's office.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I just wanted to first start off and let you know that I'm sure many of you know that we just had the state fair up in Sacramento. And Contra Costa County was represented at the state fair, and the supervisor's office headed all the volunteers to put together our booth, and we ended up winning the silver award at the state fair, and that money's being awarded to our local 4-H and FFA kids here locally. So that was a great surprise and good hard work by all of our volunteers here locally.
I went up to the fair with my family, and we had the most awesome harvest theme, and I looked at all the goods in there, and all of our neighbors' farms around here are represented there, so the harvest time and to Brentwood, the farmers were well represented in that. So.
Yeah, it looked phenomenal. They did
awesome.
A great job
a
on the
booth.
And all the kids put it together. It was
all
great.
All the produce was out there. It was like a farmer's market. It was like going to a farm stand. It was awesome.
Yeah. The road work. I'm sure a lot of you have noticed the road work out. Down on off Clipper, Newport, and all that construction is about to wrap up here within the next week. So hopefully nobody's being impacted by taking their kids to and from school, but that should be wrapped up within the next week. And lastly, we have some open positions with the county, committees, boards, commissions, and if we have any interested applicants, we have the Emergency Medical Services Committee, the Alcohol and Other Drugs Advisory Board, the Mental Health Commission, the Library Commission, the Assessment Appeals Board, Family and Children's Trust Committee, First Five, which is Children and Families Commission, and the Byron Mac, which actually doesn't really apply to residents of Discovery Bay. But anyhow, just to get that out there, that we are looking for applicants, if you know of anyone, or yourself, if you're interested, to contact our office.
That's it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, committee reports. We have no transplant, county planning, no code enforcement. We have a code enforcement.
Yeah, we do. I attached the meeting agenda with my little notes on it. But basically, the key thing that he mentioned here for Discovery Bay.
Is your microphone on?
I thought it was on.
Just flip it on the bottom.
The main thing he mentioned for Discovery Bay is the amount of people that are having construction work done without the permits. And he said it's really reached a major problem here in Discovery Bay. In fact, he gave one example of a family that went ahead and had a new deck put on. They hired an unlicensed contractor. It was a mess. They had to hire a licensed one and then pay even more in fees. So any way that we can get that word out, possibly the pipeline. I suggested they call Amanda to put it in the Delta Sun-Times, stressing the people the importance of using licensed contractors and getting their permits.
Thank you.
Marianne, I wasn't at the meeting. Was there any discussion about the home over on Newport Lane?
Yes, we did mention the home on Newport Lane, and he said it has, you know, because there's weeds and everything all over the yard now. And he said he will go back out there again. Part of the problem is that there are times when the lady is out that she has nothing on underneath her jacket. So he's kind of reserved on visits there. The hoarder lady, yes.
Thank you. Okay, a special district report?
I attended the Contra Costa County Special District Association, and specifically we were there to vote, and Igor Stardoff, who we decided to endorse, ended up in a runoff with George Smith, and Igor won 13-11.
Oh, that's close.
Igor is our guy.
Four.
And the LAFCO executive director, Lan Texera, gave a good presentation. That's why I made copies of her slide presentation for you on LAFCO, what LAFCO does, how it impacts us and other areas in the community. So I thought that was good information for you. And I'll pass these in, and that's my report.
Thank you very much. Okay, presentations, we have none. Consent calendar, I'd like to pull items F5 and F6, not because there's a problem, just so we can discuss them. And if I can get a motion other than that.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Not a lot of people here, but I wanted you to talk about, Rick, the roadway banners, what they are, so that people know what we're approving.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is a project that is sponsored by the American Heroes Tribute Organization. They have been working with locally with Sungave All, the Joey Grace Foundation, over the past 3 years. This will be the fourth year that they will be in town if the county issues the encroachment permit, which I assume that they will. As you might recall, down the Discovery Boulevard over the last 3 years, there have been a number of banners that recognize those who have given the ultimate sacrifice in defending our country in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And it is a tribute to those, and they generally try, and Kevin may want to weigh in here for a moment, but I believe that some K-Ball Foundation, that they try to recognize those that are from Northern California regionally within our area. And as a sidebar to that, I've noticed over the past couple of years, as I'm driving around town in and out during the course of the day, it's not uncommon to find people stopping, taking photographs of either just they're looking at the banners or they're visiting the banner of a loved one. So that's that.
Kevin, how long do we get to leave them?
Well, it's always Mother Nature has had an effect on that. The first few times we had them up, I think for 3 or 4 weeks, we were able to get through. Last year, they blew down in 7 days, and it just wasn't worth the risk and the liability that we have as a foundation to not take. So I went and took them down early. I'm going to actually be involved, a little more closely involved in the installation this year, and I think we can get them up a little more secure. I would like to have them at the most 30 days. But they go up, the head administrator of the foundation takes care of these details, and I'd have to ask her. But we plan to have them up for about 30 days if we can do that.
They go up the end of August?
They actually go up the first week in September.
Through October the 14th.
Okay, cool.
Or no later than October the 14th.
Yeah. If we can keep them up that long.
Good. Any more discussion? Public comment?
Thank you.
The other thing, great, we just want to know what the truck is we're getting, what we're spending on what we're getting.
Certainly. It is a 2015 F 3/4-ton 4-wheel drive F-250 gasoline-powered vehicle. I always get these confused. It's not the 4-door crew cab, it's the smaller extended cab. Thank you. That's basically the employee's work office space at that point in time. This vehicle is replacing the 1999, the first vehicle I think the district had that's exceeded over 100,000 miles, needs a new transmission, and has bad brakes. And so that vehicle's actually already been placed out of service and has been out of service for quite some time. Normally we would be purchasing half-ton vehicles, two-wheel drive, but in this case we believe that it's important that at least one of our work trucks is a four-wheel drive. Our guys sometimes get stuck in the mud. And it'd be nice to have a vehicle that can pull them out. And also, because of the pretty heavy-duty trailers that need to be pulled occasionally, and when they are, some of those half-ton vehicles just don't quite have the power to be able to do so. It's part of the purchases through Bill Brandt Ford, through the California Government Pricing Consortium. It's been previously bid to public agencies up and down the state, and so we're basically piggybacking onto that. We'll be placing the order, assuming the board approves this in the next couple of days, and we'll be probably looking at a late fall, November, December delivery time frame.
What do we spend?
Oh, I'm sorry. $25,000 plus tax and license. We're looking just under $28,000.
Good question.
Our budget was $40,000, so we were pretty happy with where the numbers came in. The state program is obviously a pretty good program. I think it was $12,000 off.
Good. Questions, everyone? Public comment? Virgil?
And I forgot to ask Rick, but if you could add another $1,000 to that, or not to exceed, because we'd like to put a couple of toolboxes on that and then cook the rear bed on that. I apologize, Rick, for I'll get back to you.
We have enough budget in order to do that, so.
Nope, no questions.
Okay.
I would make a motion to be accept items 5 and 6 of the consent agenda.
Second. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, business action items, agency comment request, land use permit application, LP 14-2044 Mariners Church.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This application is being brought by Mariners Church over off of Bixler. They are looking to expand their church facility with a preschool and a daycare center. Three buildings on site are going to be demolished, and an addition is going to be made to one existing building. If you turn to page 44 of 70 in your electronic version, slide on down. There's a artist rendering of what it will eventually look like.
And which page is it on ours?
44 of 70 of the electronic version.
See how many pages
are there?
How many pages
are there?
Where's the page number?
It shows it in the bottom. You slide up, it shows on the bottom right.
Where'd it go?
Put your hand on it, it shows the number spot right in front of it.
Makes
some
progress there.
Okay. Essentially, it's a the church has been working for a number of years on upgrading their facility and building a worship hall for their membership. They've been leasing space around town over the last couple of years. Currently, they're leasing space over off of, I think it is Bixler?
Byron Road.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, no, by the school.
Over by the boys' camp.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's at the Field of Dreams out there.
So they're looking to go ahead and do this, and it, as usual, the county just asking for board input and to see what your, if you have any questions, concerns, or would like them to address anything.
Anybody have a problem with it?
No.
Public comment? So you need a motion to press to send a letter that we have no problem with it? Get such a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We'll send the standard letter that we always send, yes.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Now I have to get back to where I was.
Well, if you just keep going down, you
just
report.
Go down to page 47 now.
It's too late. I hate electronics. Okay, agency comment request development plan application DP14-3030 Marina Circle.
Again, Mr. President, members of the board, this is brought to you by the Contra Costa County Conservation Development Department. It is a request of a homeowner on Marina Circle that would like to change a flat pitch roof to a pitched roof over the garage of a single family residence on Marina Circle. If you scroll down, I don't have a page number for you yet. Scroll down to 57.
Right here?
Yeah. I've got page 54. A number of the first pages show the actual property, where it's located. And then page 57 shows the actual property and then down what it's going to look like. So it's up to the boards. If you have an opportunity to comment on it and to make suggestions, recommendations.
Any board comment?
I have no problem.
Anybody on the board?
Yeah.
Public comment? I can get a motion?
Move.
Second.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Standard letter. Okay. No informational items. Director's comments. Kevin, anything?
No.
Chris?
All was discussed earlier.
Chris?
Good weekend.
Bill? Nope. Marianne?
No, thank you.
I have nothing. Manager's report, general manager.
Thank you. This is where the rubber hits the pavement for the agenda this evening. In front of you, there is a fact sheet I'd like to bring your attention to. For those in the audience, there's a copy in the back of the room. At the last board meeting, I brought to you a series of proposed regulations that the State Water Resources Control Board was considering implementing. And at that time, we did not know exactly. The meeting was our board meeting followed by one day their board meeting. So we weren't exactly sure what those were going to end up becoming. We now have a much better idea of what those look like. The fact sheet I provided to you gives you just the hot points for us are highlighted in yellow. That the prohibitions for all water users in California and how it affects us as an urban water supplier serving more than 3,000 customers. And what our options are as an agency for enforcement. So the first few bullets are pretty straightforward. They're pretty standard stuff. You can, by state law, you can no longer use your hose to hose down your driveway, sidewalk, theoretically your dock, although it isn't specifically spelled out. You are not allowed to use potable water that in your landscaping that runs off in public parkways, roadways, parking lots, that sort of thing. If you want to wash your car, boat, motorhome, you must use a shutoff nozzle, which is pretty standard. And this last one affects the town, specifically is the potable water in the fountain that does not recirculate. As you know, our Ravenswood Park splash pad is a non-recirculating fountain. We have subsequently turned that off. And for those residents that do pay that assessment and you pay for that splash pad, for the remainder of the swim season, we did send them a letter letting them know that if you do come over, we'll let you use the pool. The pool is open for the remainder of the swim season. So as a recap to that.
But you said no charge.
Yes. If they show a utility bill and they live in the neighborhood or they bring that copy of that letter in. So far, we've had one family take us up on it as of this morning. The next bullet down, urban water suppliers that do not have a plan or without an adequate plan. We don't have either. A water shortage emergency plan. We must either mandate that outdoor irrigation be reduced to no more than twice a week or implement other mandatory use restrictions that provide a comparable level of savings, which is basically, I've been trying to research that all day, and it keeps going back to irrigating twice a week. It doesn't tell you how long you have to irrigate, just that you have to irrigate. You can irrigate no more than twice weekly.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How would you police that?
We're going to talk about that. If you turn the page and you go to, it says at the top, State of California Office of Administrative Law. These new regs went into effect on July the 28th and will remain in effect through April the 25th, or will expire on April the 25th of 2015. I suspect that they will be maintained if the drought continues, and it will be dropped, obviously, if the drought if enough water comes through winter storms to provide some pretty substantial relief. If you move two more pages over, where it says proposed text of emergency regulations, it should no longer say proposed because this is the text of the emergency regulations. And I've highlighted the critical parts that affect us. The first page is essentially what we just talked about. It's on the fact sheet. So you can skip that page and move on to the next page. And at the top, you see it says B1. It's highlighted, it says B1. You all with me?
Mm-hmm.
To promote water conservation, each water supplier shall implement all requirements and actions of the stage of its water shortage contingency plan that imposes mandatory restrictions on outdoor irrigation of ornamental landscapes and turf and potable water. So, for example, if we had a plan in place that said, our emergency plan was that you could irrigate three times weekly. We could irrigate three times weekly. We could allow that to take place. The fact we do not have a contingent and emergency plan in place, we are now required to be subject to the twice weekly because we don't have that plan in place. So if you go down to C, it states that to promote water conservation, each water supplier that does not have a water shortage contingency plan, and it goes on, shall within 30 days limit outdoor irrigation or landscapes or turf with potable water by persons it serves to no more than 2 days per week. We have to report monthly on the 15th of each month, starting on the 15th of this month, water conservation comparing this year to last year and also per capita moving forward. I've sent to the board, I believe, under separate cover a couple weeks ago after the last board meeting. We're actually showing a little bit of a decrease. It's not big, but we're showing a reduction from 2013 to 2014. So people are starting to get the message. Hopefully it will continue on.
It was, Ricky, it's actually a fairly decent reduction, because you have to take into account there's a lot of building. Paper Homes has built 200 homes.
Yeah, the only problem is if you looked at the January and February numbers, they were really high from prior years, because we had more rain in January and February. We had less rain this year than we had in prior years, so the January and February numbers are much higher than they had been in the past. Overall, I think we calculated, what, about 13%? Was it, what was the number you gave me this morning?
Overall savings?
Yeah.
Just under 7.
Just under 7.
6.9%. Not quite the 20 or 10 that the state we were looking for.
So if you, the next page goes on to just an FAQ sheet from the State Water Board, specifically who do the prohibitions apply to? They apply to all Californians. And what we have to do is we have to try and reach 20% as a water, as a public water agency. So what we've done is we put out a press release, and we put the message board out. In the newsletter that's coming out, we have an article on it. We also have helpful hints and tips on what you can do to encourage or to reduce your water consumption. Most water is used outside. It's used in irrigation versus inside the home. So that's really what the state is focusing on, is outside irrigation. With respect to enforcement, there is a draft ordinance that is at the back of this attachment packet for you, that I've been working on with legal for the board consideration. So essentially, the first few items that you can't use the hose, wash your car without a shutoff nozzle. But if you go down to the bottom where it says one of the following, you with me?
Mm-hmm. No.
Mr. President, are you there?
No.
It says number ordinance five. Number at the top of the page.
Section 4, number 5.
I'm on the wrong page. Oh, here we go. Okay.
So you go down to the bottom of the first page. It says outdoor irrigation lawns, ornamental landscapes, or turf with potable water, except as follows. And this is a very common restriction up and down the state, and it goes back, I think, to the old gas war days when it's even numbered license plate. If your address is an even number, you can water on certain days. If it's an odd number, you can water on certain days. The reason they do that is because if as a public agency, if we see someone that's an odd number watering on an even day, we can give them a notice. We can let them know, hey, you can't water on these days. These are the only days you can water. Failure to comply with the state's regulations as a public agency are potentially $10,000 a day fines per day. My goal was to get out ahead of that, just to make sure that we have the information. We're getting it out there. The community knows about it. And with respect to your question on enforcement, the board could do a number of things. The Mountain House CSD has said they're going to enforce it, but they're not going to assess fines. I don't know how they end up enforcing it that way.
Yeah, so what their intent to do is to use their current CC&Rs and use the violations and the process for notice of violations. They have a very rigorous CC&R approach in terms of first notice, second notice, third notice, then a fine, then an appeal process, then a secondary appeal process, and then the final fine. So they're going to use their CC&Rs currently. But they're not hiring anybody new at this point in time. They're going to just allow the public and staff to self-report and see if they can hit the 20. I think most jurisdictions are attempting to do that and not put in a program. Sacramento's the only one I heard that is hiring new enforcement officers to actually go out and regulate on this, because I think they're definitely concerned that they're not going to make the 20%, and being that they're the capital, are going to be under much more scrutiny than every other small jurisdiction. So all of our local small jurisdictions and other jurisdictions are just going to try to see what happens with the 20% and see what the numbers come in on the monthly reports.
Just to give you an idea on the numbers, there was a State Water Resources Control Board did a survey of public agencies. We were not included in the survey. But I was reviewing those results the other day, and there were 258, I believe, that asked the question whether or not they have an emergency contingency plan, and only about 10% of them did not. The remainder did. So there's a number of them that are out there. And these are more of the larger districts, I would say. But about 50% of those have not implemented any measures yet whatsoever. So to say that we're ahead of the curve or behind the curve, I just think we're right on the curve. I just think we're right there. This board took an action, I want to say, back in May to request voluntary 20% reduction. We passed a resolution to that effect, and this is the next step moving forward. With respect to Discovery Bay, you also received a report recently from our water engineers, Ludorf and Scalmanini, who conducted a basin-wide assessment for us and determined that our basin is fairly stable and it's been recharging at a rate that it would be expected. We don't get delta water, we don't get surface water. I think this is aimed more at aquifers that are adjudicated, meaning that they are used by a number of people, and there's laws that deal with how much water you can take out of them, as well as the delta. But nonetheless, it still applies to us, and any water we save in that regard, while it would not be able to be used by anybody else unless farmers are drilling wells for their needs into the same aquifer that we draw from, it really won't have much of an impact on us. So what I'm looking for is direction from the board. I just want to make sure that we have...
I have a question.
That we're staying out ahead of the state, so that if the state comes in and says, you're not doing enough, we can state that, well, we are doing it. These are the actions that we have taken and moving forward.
Was there a change since we had the last ordinance for voluntary a reduction? Have you seen a major significant drop in the water usage?
Yes, and just for the month of July, comparing July, which has been very hot, as you all well know, plus we've had probably about 150 new homes on board, and so they're probably watering their new turf probably two, maybe three times a day because of the heat. We had a 13% difference compared to July of 2013 reduction. So that's very good in that regard. Like Rick, I think the residents here are complying, they want to help to conserve.
I'm not sure that the request to voluntarily reduce 20% had a lot to do with it, but I think that the publicity that's out there had a substantial amount to do with it.
Rick, you mentioned a $10,000 fine, and nowhere, anywhere in this literature do you give us to say anything more than a $500 fine. Why are you saying a $10,000 fine?
$500 fine is for residential.
Okay, where does it say in here that there's a $10,000 fine? It's not in here. So who gets the $10,000 fine?
Yeah, the full code of the emergency regulation is not here. The $10,000 fine is a state fine that the state, should you not hit the 20%, should you not have an enforcement mechanism in place, should you not have the proper reporting requirements, you can be hit with a $10,000 per day per violation fine. That is a fine that goes directly to the state. The $500 is an authorization by the state because you don't have general police powers. So what the state has done by their emergency regulation is given you enforcement mechanism up to $500 to collect. Should you collect that, should you have a violation, should you collect some, and we've got a different scheme in there. We didn't use the $500. We just think that's abusive. We put in a first, second, and third tier violation program. Should you assess any of those fines and collect those are yours to keep.
And what makes us as a district think that somehow 20% and 2 days of watering are in any way related? Since we don't know how many days people water anyway, I mean, how are those related?
The state has determined that by limiting irrigation, landscape irrigation to twice weekly, that you should be able to hit the 20% target just by doing that.
whether it's
in combination with those other things, because they've got the boat washing, they've got the car washing, they've got the squirting off, and they've got the water.
All they did is grab a number, throw it against the
wall. Absolutely.
Yeah, because any 2 days a week, I water my lawn 20 minutes longer. You're not saving anything.
Should we give some thought to, being that we now have to enforce this, having some kind of a not a citation, but a voucher printed, where if an employee of the town or us or whoever it is has got somebody who's a violator, you can put it on the door and you can put it, and this is your warning.
Well, our ordinance currently in place was adopted back in 1998. It's ordinance number 7 or 5, 7. There is one small paragraph that refers to enforcement, and it does give us the ability to go out and enforce water waste. That's really about it. And it describes, it gives a definition of what the term waste means. And it's basically what goes on here, you know, overwatering, water running off, that sort of thing. There's no enforcement to it at all. What we've been doing and what Virgil's been doing prior to my arrival and what he's been continuing doing with his staff is that even prior to this, if he sees somebody or they see somebody that has a broken sprinkler head, it's just blowing in the air, there appears to be a leak, they'll go tag it. There's a door hanger that we have. We'll go tag that. We are revising that. We're creating some red door hangers because we have blue ones. They're mostly for turnoffs in our water system, for our retail customers that pay on a monthly basis. So what we're going to be implementing, what we're going to be getting printed up are some new door hangers that have, at your address, it was noticed that this was taking place. There's a bunch of options you can check. If you have any questions, please contact us. And it's a very subtle way of saying, hey, we noticed you have a leak, can you go ahead and repair it? We were hoping to be able to have a copy that we can pull off so we can follow up on at a later date. If they call into the office, then we have a record of it and we can be able to help them. And it also has links to different websites through the state, saverh2o.org, and another one, through the state as well.
If you got a neighbor calls and says, my neighbor's out washing his deck every day out the back of it, if you have some way of, if we're told we have enforcement powers,
we would go out and let them know. We would go out and give them a door hanger or knock on the door.
Can I wash my house off before I paint it?
Don't paint it dirty.
You know, that's a good question. That question came up today.
Power wash.
That
seasonal.
But Rick, to get back, because I'm still not getting my question answered. If you go out to the person's house and you have a door hanger, which is wonderful, giving them all, it should have something on that door hanger that says what you're in violation of according to the state regulation. The state says you cannot do this, and we're informing you that you are doing this. You need to stop it.
It does. That's what it does. There's a checklist. There's a box. You can check the boxes as to what the violation would be.
You're going to have those few items on that door hanger that are identified under Section 4.
And are they, is it a warning saying this is your first violation, the second violation is going to be this, or what?
If you look at Section 6, it gives you a generic violate. So what we're suggesting to our local jurisdictions is that you attempt to do it by a notice, a citation, and then should people just be sitting there saying, heck with you, I'm not complying, and they continue to do it, then you provide another violation. It's completely discretion, at your discretion, and only would you want to start picking up penalties. I mean, this isn't a revenue generator for you. This is an attempt to good stewards of what the state's identified as a state water emergency, and so it's a bit at our discretion and your discretion.
I'm thinking that the average person, if they're not paying attention to hosing their deck off, you put them there, they're going to stop hosing their deck off. You know, I forgot all about it. I don't do it anymore. I mean, I don't think people are looking to get past this. I really don't.
I can tell you the jurisdictions we're already working with that are already doing this, something similar to this are not having problems.
Yeah, I don't think we are either.
This is not a difficult issue.
I have two questions. First off, you mentioned about the odd and even number, but in at least where I live, and I don't know about where Kevin lives, we're on a sprinkler system that does the entire complex. So how do you handle it?
We have that same.
Well, it still does the entire complex.
We have the same problem at our parks that you have in your HOAs. We water our parks in a cycle system. So the grass may get watered X number of times a week, and different shrub beds may get watered different times a week. We're still going to water multiple times a week, but we're only going to water those areas twice a week. And
right.
So the HOAs theoretically would be getting a letter that's going to explain this to them.
Okay.
But and how do you get them to comply with that?
Well,
we're just going to have to see how they're doing visually, and if it appears that they're overwatering, if it appears that they're not complying, we'll let them know.
Well, they can still water twice a week. The problem is, because it's set up as the entire complex, you can't split it in half and do the odd number and even number. So it's the odd and even numbers that's the question.
It's a good recommendation. We can draft the language to say, I mean, I think the odd and even are good. I think it's a good solution for enforcement. But you could say, I mean, we could add language in there that said if it's on a track and set up, but no more than two times a day.
And then my second question is, in the one you mentioned 1 to 7, and on the other one you don't say anything about time frames. And why was it chosen?
I'm sorry, where are you?
On and or. One of the following. You've got between 1 and 7 p.m. I was
good
curious
catch, thank you.
Why that's listed under the first, but
good
not
catch,
the
yeah,
second.
Good catch. It's an error. We added the or. Last minute.
And then why the choice of that time frame? Because like mine all go on at midnight. So
yeah,
between 1 and 7? No, it says between 1. Oh, before 1 and a half 7.
Before,
never mind.
Before 1 and
I got
half
it.
7.
No,
I can't
what about?
Read.
That's a state recommended time frame.
The other thing I just heard Kevin start to say, what about large water users? What do you do if we're a large water user? What about our pool? What about, I mean, it's, have we given that any thought?
There are no current regulations associated with that. They're asking that everybody conserve and be smart about how they use water for major water purveyors, but there are no current regulations. I have heard that there is talk about next year, if there were in a drought, that people will not be able to refill their pools. Local pools will not be open. I've heard all sorts of extremes associated with it. Car washes will all be shut down. I've heard all sorts of extremes should the drought continue. 5 items that you have listed in the ordinance now is all that's required is 20%. Hopefully, the goal is hit the 20%, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Right? Make the 20% and you don't have to go enforce anything. Make the 20%, you don't have to worry about, some of these other issues.
But I think with respect to the large water users that you're referring to are our landscape areas, our parks, the owner of the steakhouse, the country club, the HOAs. And from those water users, they would have to comply with this. I think, were you thinking more in terms of farmers, large water users?
No, I think I was responding to the pool in that. I mean,
you're talking about large water users.
Yeah, should they apply, should the terms of the 5 items apply to the current large water users you have within your district, they're obligated to perform all those.
So if I'm to understand what Mary Ann just said, the second 5 also has an A and B under it, identical to the A and B under the first 5. Is that what?
It does not. So what we were proposing is that you would either choose 5 A and B, or
5.
Just 5.
Okay.
Because if you read it, 5 A and B tries to delineate when people could use, so it's easier to enforce for enforcement.
Right.
5 alone just is no more than 2 days, but you'd have no real idea as to when those 2 days are. People could be
Guys,
Monday,
I didn't
Thursday,
water yesterday.
I didn't water on Friday.
Yeah.
I watered Monday and Wednesday. Well, how would you know? So it's to help with that. But in dealing with the HOA, we could draft language if that makes it simple.
The last thing we want to do is to get into a confrontation with anybody over this. It's strictly education. All this does is provide for those people that are not participating and not abiding by the rules. It gives you a little bit of an enforcement angle, and that's really all it does. The one thing that is in process, though, is, I mentioned that we don't have a plan in place. That plan is currently being developed, and actually funds were put in the budget this year to do the urban water management plan. And we should have the first draft of that by the end of this month or sometime in early September. So we are well on the way to going there, and depending on how that comes out, it may have an impact on how this gets amended or stays in place into the future.
Can we do a door hanger for every house in Discovery Bay as a conservation message and just remind these people? You know, to...
It's in the newsletter.
I know, but maybe we should do it door to door. I mean, the realtors do it. It works, you know. You get right to the door.
I don't know how we have manpower to do that. I think we should use our pipeline, but just take and dedicate a full quarter page or something. I don't think the door hanger thing is a good concept, but I just don't think the practicality of it, making that happen. But if we designed a page or a quarter page, half page in our pipeline, I think people would see that.
It's going out pretty soon, and it is the front page story.
I get a big catchy front cover, and you get those guys on it.
The story is fine, but actually if we were to adopt this ordinance, put in there the time frames that we're suggesting and the fining system that we're suggesting. I don't know if you have time to put that in.
It's currently out to print.
Okay. Next, Mark.
Next quarter,
we can go from house to house and write another.
To say that I, as usual, the state is putting out an unfunded mandate, as they typically do, and passing it on down the line, same way they did with the prisons and the counties. But unfortunately, I think the only way for us to be in compliance in a way that we have any argument at all in case we don't meet our numbers is to adopt the recommendations that the state's made to us. So therefore, at least we can say, but we did what you asked us to, and granted, we need to do more, but apparently what you asked wasn't enough for our district, and we need to be more diligent, and we need to do whatever we need to do. So if you're looking for action on this evening?
We're not looking for any action other than the direction with respect to 5A and 5B, and if I heard the consensus is keep 5A and 5B, but deal with Director Reason's suggestion in terms of dealing with the homeowner association. We'll deal with language that addresses that. The item will, as it's an ordinance, will come back before you at the next meeting for its first reading, and then the very next meeting in September, it will, should you approve it, would be adopted and go into effect then. Doesn't prevent us from continuing the education, doesn't prevent us from taking the steps, but just timing wise in terms of boards, there's no obligation to do this on a special meeting. That's the game plan. So no action other than direction tonight.
Just clarification. If one of you, maybe Mr. Simon, talked about the pressure washing of the decks and the docks. I'm not sure if that would be like pushing down your driveway. I would think it would be, but I'm not sure how the board as a whole would think that. And what's another item under your state? My old great memory. Back, I'll bring it back to you. Sorry.
All right. Any public comment?
There's one thing. When I walk,
come on up.
Oh, you can hear me. There's a house on the market that nobody's there, and when I walk every day, friend and I walk, it's always got water running down into the street. So would you go to the realtor?
Well, go that or
you
call
us.
Let us know.
Any other comment? All right, let's move on. General Manager's report, item 2, Town of Discovery Bay surplus storage.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item I'm bringing to you for direction and possible action in the future. As you know, over a number of years, the town has tried to be a good neighbor and a good partner when it comes to some of our service organizations, be it whether it's the Discovery Lions Club, the Delta Lions, and has participated at the chambers, participated in a number of different events with them. Whether we have let them use and exercise some of our generators for some of their events, or we put the signboard up to advertise something or another that's of community interest. But over the years, the Lions Club has had the use of an abandoned well house, if you will, on Discovery Bay Boulevard. I believe it was originally well 3. and we were using that facility as well, and we had some stuff stored in there, and it got very conflicting between our personal, not personal, but the town's equipment, as well as their equipment, and so we ended up moving them to four, thank you, and we moved them down into well house four to store their equipment. It's basically tables and chairs and a nice chest for their different events that they have in town. When they made that move, the president of the chain, the president of the Lions Club at that time, I had a conversation with them, and I said, I think it's appropriate that if the Lions Club is going to continue to receive storage for their equipment and their items, that there needs to be monetary exchange for that. And so the Lions Club earlier this year has been indicated, I believe, at the community center grand opening that they would donate annually $1,000 to the community center in exchange for that.
Whoa, time out. That was never discussed. When they gave it, they didn't say it was an exchange for any service. They just gave it as a gift. When did it become an exchange? That was not stated that night, anyway. I was there.
No, I know.
So that's a little questionable.
So the we'd always been the town has always given the Lions Club free storage for whatever reason when it was it's been going on probably from the very beginning. And so I had a conversation with the Lions Club president, and I suggested that they might want to make a contribution to the community center in good faith, and that was how that came about. Subsequent to that, I received a call from the Lions Club president, and he asked if they could put a small storage shed there, similar to something that might be like a tough shed outside. And since it would be small and protected, or you couldn't see it from where it was at, from the street or from the neighborhood, I didn't really have too much issue with it, and I told him so long as it's a small one. But we all know what happened. It ended up becoming a full-size roll-off container. Evidently, they received it for free. They received it free of charge, and so they got it. They got it delivered, and they would like to start using it. And I told them that I didn't feel that that was appropriate. That I need to bring it to this body so that the board can give me direction on what it is you would like to do. Whether we continue that process, whether we have them move that out. It's our property, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in on it. And so that's where we're at.
There's going to be some comments here.
Well, I would suggest that if we're offering storage space at a highly reduced rate of $80 a month to nonprofits, that it should go to all nonprofits. Why are we just offering this to one nonprofit? And there's nonprofits in this town that pay $250 a month to store their stuff over at Hoffman that don't have nearly the budget that the Lions Club does. Is there a legal issue with us using town property and giving it without any compensation to anybody? That's not a legal issue, is it? Using assets of the town that way?
I have not discussed this yet with Ray. I want to reserve my comments.
I can think
about it a little bit more.
Okay.
I can tell you that
wasn't premeditated. I just thought I'd ask the question.
I can tell you that in prior communities that I've worked in, it was not uncommon for these two of the cities I've worked for previously to provide some sort of beneficial use as a partner to the as a community partner, if you will.
That's accurate. I mean, the general rule is that you can't make a gift of public funds.
All right.
To the extent that you've got an individual requesting shared space, and it doesn't cost you anything, generally not a problem.
So then the other thing that I'm curious about, I was down there talking with Jim's Rule, David's Rule. One day I saw his truck there, I stopped and chatted with him, and I actually helped him load some stuff out of the storage unit into his vehicle.
He's the new president.
What?
He's the new president.
Exactly. And we chatted for a while, and that, you know, the storage unit itself, the actual pump house, is 75% empty. There's nicely, I mean, they've done a great job of laying it out. They got some food products here. They've got some tables all stacked up nice and neat. Chairs are all stacked up. And the whole, I mean, it's empty. And so I don't understand why they need something as obtrusive as the container there. But secondly, in the nature of being a good neighbor, and I think the Lions Club is a good neighbor to the town. I'm sure that we've used their tables for our events at the community center before. That's not the issue here. They've been a good neighbor. They do a lot of stuff here in town. They help out to bring about the atmosphere we like in our community. We're good. We're all, work well along with them. But as a good neighbor, you don't say one thing and then do another without asking permission. And that's not the sign of a good neighbor, to say, hey, I'm going to put a little an unobtrusive thing here, and the next thing, without asking or even indicating we've changed our mind, drop a 20-foot container there.
I've had this conversation with you offline, and as I indicated to you, and I'll tell the rest of the board, it showed up, and it was a surprise to me. Didn't know it was coming, didn't expect it, didn't anticipate it. I asked Virgil about it. He had the exact same response. Did not know it was coming. It's a 40-foot roll-off container.
40 or 20?
20. 20. 20, I'm sorry. But it's like the kind that go on the...
It's a cargo container.
It's a cargo container, thank you.
Buy and sell.
And
is
so...
Is it taking district space right now that could be used for a project for our landscape
no.
group?
We could theoretically use that space, but right now I've discussed it with both Virgil as well as Farron, and both have indicated that at this point in time there's no need. We have no need for that space right now.
And if we let them know with a quick notice, that could be moved, right?
No.
No, especially once they fill it.
Yeah, no.
It's got to go on the back and roll off truck together.
They were planning on painting it, and they were planning on skirting the roof of it so that it's not as blatant to the neighbors.
Can we put together some sort of a mutual benefit?
I'm just giving you information from what I was told.
So can we put together a mutual benefit? An agreement with any public group or a nonprofit?
Yeah, you can enter in an agreement that's got specific terms in it that says this is what you're allowing them to do for X number of dollars or X number of other benefits or consideration otherwise herein recognized, and then have terms in it that say within 10 days, 15 days, 30 days of notice, you'll remove it immediately should the district property become necessary.
The benefit of the pump house alone is a value of about $280 a month. If you were to go over to Hoffman's Storage and rent that size of a unit, it would be about $280 a month. That's really not my issue. My issue is having a storage container and the way it was done, and having that storage container out there. We're already giving them 450, 500 square feet, Virgil, in there. It's at least 20 by 20.
I think it's a 20 by...
The container is, but what's the...
No, container is 20 by 8, and the pump house is 20 by 10.
Okay, so we're already giving them, a two-car garage.
Why don't we charge another $1,000 a year for the container? It's up to them. They can pay $2,000 if you have two spots.
But do we really want a storage container sitting visible from the street when you drive into Discovery Bay? There's a storage container sitting there.
You have to look for it, but I...
Have to look for it. It sticks above the fence.
Can I finish, please?
Well, I just want to state the facts. You don't have to look for it.
Can I finish, please? I agree that it needs to be screened and that it needs to be painted in a fashion that it's not a visual blight. So how you get to that point, I don't know, but I think that if they want to keep it there, they need to be charged with that also, along with disguising it.
I would recommend that we enter into a formal agreement with them that identifies and spells out what they get and what we get. I mean, it's our property. I mean, the gold.
I would agree. We can't do a handshake deal on this. So there needs to be something.
We've gone
beyond
that.
Yeah.
I think the only sticking point, I have the same sticking point Kevin does, is that they put it in here without talking to us. They've had the little house there forever and ever, and I mean, I've helped them load that thing 50 times when I plan stuff. They have plenty of room inside of it. And then we moved them into something else, and then they came in and just put a roll off. And I don't think it's right. I mean, I think I certainly have nothing to gain by not wanting the last stuff to be successful. I'm a member, and they do wonderful things, but letting them come in with a container
But another nonprofit comes and says, you know, you got a container here for Lazar. We'd like to put one over here in your other land down there. And we say no to them. I mean, I think you have to look at which fair is fair for them to come in and just drop something in here. You know, the only reason we let them use the pump house in the first place is because we use their stuff. And we don't use it very often. So they kind of neatly put it over in a corner. Now it's become a thing that they're entitled to. And I don't think that's right.
And I appreciate what Director Pease is saying about this, you know, try to enhance the appearance of it. But the situation is, unless we're going to raise the level of the fence, you're not going to hide the container because it's higher than the fence is. So you can't hide it unless you build a higher fence. And I don't know if there's codes that affect that, or who's going to pay for a higher fence, or how you're going to
put a facade on top of it. Like the movie industry. I'm kind of really wondering if they're really even, I mean, I know what they put in there.
What do they want to put in there?
Tables and chairs is what they put in there. But yeah. What I'm wondering is, did they just put this here because they got it for nothing?
I think so.
They got it for free. They don't really need it. And I think for us to say, here, just go put that on our property, we don't really need it.
Well, I got to tell you, it saved me a lot of money if I could put a storage container someplace in Discovery Bay and not pay often $236 a month.
I think the agreement should go back to what it was before. We let them use the little pump house. They do stuff for the town. We do stuff for them. It's a win-win situation, but I think the needs to go.
I will have that conversation, convey that back to the Lions, if that's the consensus of the board.
I think they're putting us in a spot that we have to offer that same thing to every other nonprofit that wants to do. If the Chamber of Commerce comes in and says, you know, we're very active in Discovery Bay, we want to put one in, should we tell them no?
I think they really need to assess their needs and be clear and more clear that they might be excessive or may not. I don't know yet, but you think you should have a conversation with them, and I think there could be ways to, if it really was needed, then let us know why they really need it.
Well, you know, like I said, if I hadn't happened to go by there, and you've been in there too, and seeing how much room there is in that pump house still, that's really my sticking point is, you know, I think it really comes down to, hey, we have an opportunity to get free storage, and let's just throw it here. And I'm not sure that they need it, and I'm not here to evaluate their needs because they're not here to tell us what their needs are.
I think, again, the thing is they got it for free.
I really agree with you there.
I mean, I've been, in the last 5 years,
it changes everything when I think about it.
I've gone over there several times with help them load and unload after an event, and they barely use the pump house.
And I think, and I don't have a problem with them using the pump house because I say they're good for the community.
If they got a container, they're going to have to pay for it. And if it could meet our standards for unobtrusive.
Well, I think we've got enough direction on this.
Let Rick talk to him and see what happens. Okay. Any other discussion? We shall move on to district legal.
Always a pleasure. It's like Dan always.
Would that be your complete report?
Really?
That would be the entire report.
No committee updates?
I'll change my report if that's what Dan always said. I just have nothing.
Okay. No committee updates, correspondence from just the State Route 4 Bypass Authority meeting. Public records request none. Any future agenda items? Anybody? In that case, we are adjourned. Thank you for coming.